Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We're live from Titans training camp. Delaney Walker joins us in 30 minutes. And at 12:30 today, Corey Davis.
So we teased a big announcement at 11:30 today. We will deliver a big announcement right now. Starting right now, every week on the Midday 180, every Friday, we will be joined by Clay Travis from Outkick the Coverage. We are pumped up about this. This is going to be great throughout the remainder of summer into the football season. Clay, welcome aboard. We're excited to get this thing rolling.
Yeah, I appreciate being able to come on with you guys. I'll enjoy talking to people in Nashville again on the Zone, and obviously it's my hometown, so I'm excited. You guys have a great show, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, we're thrilled about this, and the great thing about Clay is he can be a business analyst, a political analyst, a sports analyst. He can wear a number of hats, especially with his history as an attorney also. So, Clay, I want you to flex some of your muscle right here, because this is a story that you've been all over that we've yet to talk about. 21st Century Fox and Walt Disney approving a deal for Disney to buy Fox assets. What does this story mean moving forward?
I think big picture, the goal is for Disney to be able to compete with Netflix. And so that's the underlying motivation behind why they are buying the Fox assets. And there has been sort of a universal acknowledgement that in order to compete with all of the billions of dollars, that's billions with a B, that Netflix is spending on all of their brand new shows, that they are going to have to bulk up in their overall assets. So there is, I believe next year, I'm not sure if they set the official date, but I know it's next year, they are going to launch their own video streaming service, which some people are just calling Disneyflix. And effectively, it will be a competitor with Netflix, and they'll be able to take a lot of these Fox assets. Now, what they're buying the library of movies that Fox has. They will be buying, for people out there who are kind of curious, they'll be buying Deadpool if you're a Marvel fan. They'll be buying the X-Men rights. They'll be able to put all those in the same movie, so you could have the X-Men meets now Spider-Man, because I know they're able to make the Spider-Man movies with Marvel. All of those different directions. They will be adding FX, which will become a Disney-owned channel. Nat Geo, I believe. There's a huge list of different parts of this of the Fox company. Now, Fox is retaining Fox News, Fox Broadcast Network, FS1, FS2, and the Big Ten Network, among other assets. But that's kind of the rough boilerplate of what's going on there.
Clay, and I believe the first big streaming show that this Disneyflix will have is an original Star Wars series. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, the real question I think that everybody's going to get into is, does Disney have the gumption to start putting some of their original Star Wars or Marvel or anything like that direct to the Disneyflix type offering? You know, Netflix, to their credit, they're not trying to release things into television. They're not trying to release things in the movie theater. They make everything and put it directly onto Netflix. So that's why I think it's a little bit of a challenge for Disney to compete, but it's a wild thing. I mean, Netflix now is a bigger company than Disney, which is pretty wild for people to get their hands around. That Disney, which owns all the theme parks, all the history of all the Disney movies, and ESPN and everything else that they own, that still Netflix now is bigger from a market capitalization perspective, more valuable than Disney.
Clay Travis with us on the Midday 180. Clay, I think when LaJuan was drafted, you were still with 3HL. I think I'm right in that. Today he signs the richest deal for an offensive lineman in NFL history. If I would have told you during his rookie season that he would do that, he would get the 5-year extension before his contract expired, would you have believed me?
Well, I wouldn't have sent the tweet saying, why in the world are they drafting him? that would be number one. If I remember correctly, it's been several years now. first of all, I was wrong, obviously. I mean, it's turned into an incredibly good pick for the Titans, and they still believe he has a lot of good years left based on what they're paying him. If I'm correct, I believe they still had Michael Roos at left tackle.
Yeah, they did.
When they drafted him. Yeah. So my concern then was I felt like the Titans needed to go get somebody who could make an immediate difference on the team, and I felt like they had a left tackle already, and so I didn't like the idea of drafting a left tackle to build for the future when I thought they could have gone and gotten somebody immediately who would have made a bigger difference. Now, I was wrong, and so he's turned out well, but that was the motivation behind my initial not happiness about the pick, was just I wanted them to get somebody who was going to be a day one starter. Obviously they found one who's going to be a day, you know, year two, year three and on starter, and obviously become a major foundation of their offensive line.
I want to, from your attorney perspective here, from the agent perspective, you know, LaJuan, they had open dialogue with the Titans. We've seen that with Jake Matthews now in Atlanta. But out west with Aaron Donald, with Khalil Mack, they're holding out. How would you advise these guys with the leverage that they have and the hand they have to play to get the money that they're worth?
It's such a good question. And I don't know. First of all, anytime you're involved in a negotiation, you're not only negotiating for yourself, you're negotiating against someone else. So part of that is assessing your past history with the person you're negotiating with, the trustworthiness in which you hold them. What kind of relationship does your agent have with that team? So there's no one size fits all, aspect to this. And also, I mean, again, it's always tough because I've been in some of these situations. It's always tough to remember, you know, like be a business person. That's what I always say is like it's very easy to get emotional when you are negotiating involving yourself, and you need almost to step outside of your physical being and your own perception and try to analyze yourself as a business asset without your intellect and your opinions and your feelings all getting wrapped up into it. Most people can't do that. Whenever I've negotiated deals, involving myself, and I've been involved in a lot of them. Now, I have agent representation sometimes. Sometimes I have not. But it's always a kind of a step back, learn the market, assess yourself, and contemplate the larger picture before you make any kind of rash decision. I just signed a radio extension for my radio show in the morning, and it was 6 months of negotiation. It went on a very, very long time. But I've got a great relationship with my bosses at Fox Sports Radio, and I felt like we wanted to end up at the same place, which was a deal done. They just want to pay me less than I want to get paid, right? I mean, that's kind of the very basics of it. And certainly even at the Zone, I've had really good negotiations, and then I had one that didn't go well, but I don't begrudge any of that because I think ultimately you have to have a sense for your own value. So it sounds like LaJuan and the Titans basically had this thing worked out, but kind of had to keep their lips sealed until it came out and all the, you know, I's were dotted and T's were crossed. But I suspect, we'll never know, but I suspect that Taylor LaJuan would have held out if this deal had not been basically agreed to already.
Clay, so you were in D.C. this week and moderated a panel with Sean Spicer? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. I was up, they invited me to come in and be involved. I mean, I went to George Washington in D.C., and there was a big, I think they had like 800 high school kids for a big conference, and they said, hey, would you be interested in coming up here and talking to the kids and moderating a panel? I mean, it was just me and him with the former White House press secretary who was under Trump, and I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting, just because I was genuinely curious, you know, regardless of what your politics are, what the job of being a White House press secretary for Donald Trump would have been like. So I talked to him there in public for about 30 minutes. So it was pretty cool.
Clay, two big media stories I want to ask you about, and they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. The New York Daily News with a ton of layoffs this week. They got a lot of pub. Meanwhile, The Athletic is hiring people left and right every single day to come work for that publication. You were a part of a website sort of similar to The Athletic's model and what trying to do. So, first off, what do you think about the layoffs of the New York Daily News? And is this financially sustainable for The Athletic, or are they simply trying to inflate their worth so they can then sell their website?
One, on the New York Daily News, I mean, they have fallen victim to what every newspaper fell victim to, which was this idea that they needed to be online and give away their content for free. And I wrote about this some today at Outkick.com in my mailbag, you know, kind of looking at it. But I'm 39, so I'm old enough to remember, like, hey, I want to go get to read the newspaper to see who won a game the night before. I understand, like, my kids ask Siri and they ask, you know, they get on their iPads and figure out who won games the night before. So that ship has sailed in some way. But I think the great flaw of newspapers in general was they decided when the internet happened, we're going to give our content away for free online and advertising is going to one day pay for it. And the big flaw in their thinking there, and this is major and this was massive, was that in the newspaper, there's a limited number of ads you can sell. So if you go out to a car dealership or you go out to someone and you sell them on an ad, you might only have 40 pages of ads in a newspaper that you can sell. The internet is an infinite number of ads to sell. And it's, when you have an infinite property, eventually it's going to drive the price down. And so as a result, the way that the newspaper was created, they couldn't make money at their existing dynamic when they were, on the one hand, still doing a print publication, which no one was buying anymore in substantial numbers, and giving it away for free online, hoping that the advertising was going to pay for it. So the New York Daily News has just gotten caught by that, like so many other newspapers have in the country. The Athletic, I don't know. I mean, you know, The Athletic seems to be able to sell right now the idea that they are going to do a subscription-based model, which is everybody's going to pay $6 a month for their favorite team, and they're going to roll all those costs in together, and effectively they are going to be like, you know, subscription basis. Everybody's trying to be the Netflix of something now, right? Netflix has got 127 million subscribers. So everybody's trying to be the Netflix of something. The challenge, I would say, in general, is that much of what The Athletic is writing is out there in public. And I'm not sure, I see this in my own life, I'm not sure how much demand there is for written content on a day-to-day basis when there's still so much of it out there that is free online and when everybody aggregates the news so rapidly. So as long as somebody will give you money for the company, what the Athletic is doing is they keep raising new funds of venture capital. And they, let's say somebody says, hey, your company's worth $1 million. And I say, okay, I'm going to sell 10% of it. Well, then I take that $100,000 that I raised and I go spend it. And hopefully in that process, I've inflated the value of my company to $2 or $3 million. So if I go back out and I sell another 10%, I get more money and I can go spend that too. They're taking the venture capital money. People are betting big money that they are going to eventually turn into a good business, and they're using the money that people are placing as bets to go hire all of their staff. Now, what I have seen happen over and over again with a lot of businesses on the internet is the projections are not met. And when the projections are not met, eventually what happens? Layoffs, and everybody goes in the opposite direction. So I hope that people end up making money writing online. I think it's a very worthy endeavor. Certainly it's something that I've managed to do for myself without having to create a massive company. But I'm just skeptical that anybody is going to be able to pull it off, because other than Bleacher Report, there hasn't hardly been any company that sold at a very high valuation anywhere in the world of sports media since the internet got founded, you know, 20 some odd years ago when people started spending a lot of time there.
Clay, question coming from you on Twitter. This is from Wes in Franklin about the A.J. Johnson trial going on in Knoxville. Says the state seems to have a lot of holes in their case. The defense actually rested without calling a single witness this morning to go straight to closing arguments. How often have you seen this happen? How risky of a move is it? And overall, what do you think about what you've read with this A.J. Johnson case?
Well, I know A.J. Johnson didn't take the stand. And as a defense attorney, usually if you put your client on the stand, it's a little bit of a Hail Mary because you have no idea what he's going to say. And for people out there who probably don't spend a lot of time in the criminal justice system, the most famous case, obviously connected to sports, O.J. Simpson never took the stand in his own defense. In an ideal way, as a defense attorney, you present reasonable doubt without having to put your client on the stand and put him under oath and give the risk that he might say something inappropriate there, or might, you know, suborn himself for perjury, or might even admit a crime on the stand. I think it's always difficult to predict what a jury's going to do. So give caveats here in all those respects. based on what I have read, and again, I want to make more caveats, as a lawyer, I like to be in the courtroom and watch every single minute. And then there's a ton of lawyers probably listening to you right now who are on their lunch break that can say, hey, I watched every minute of this trial, and when the jury went out, I had no idea what they were going to say, or even I thought we had won this case, and there was no doubt that the jury came back and we got slammed. But I think it's going to be hard to get a conviction in this A.J. Johnson case based on what I have read about the evidence and based on following it in that respect. I went back and I read a lot of stuff, but again, I haven't read the court transcript, and I always feel more comfortable making predictions on what judges are going to do, because the law is easier to figure out than what 12 people who have been randomly selected in this particular jurisdiction are going to think of the law and of the case that was made to them. But I think it's going to be hard for A.J. Johnson to get convicted personally based on what I have seen so far from this case.
Clay, in the final 2 minutes we have with you, what do you think Mark Zuckerberg is thinking with the way Facebook stock has fallen?
Well, I mean, that Facebook is still worth over $500 billion, so I would say it's got to be a good feeling to be able to lose $20 billion and still be worth $200 billion or whatever he's worth. So I don't think he's probably losing that much sleep at night. But I do think, I mean, Twitter's taking a hit today. I've got a lot of Twitter stock. I do think that it is an interesting time that we're in right now with the social media businesses, and how big, how much bigger are they going to get, and how much more time are people going to give over? Because ultimately, I think Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, said it really well. He said people are like, oh, you're competing with HBO. You're competing with so-and-so. And I think, oh, he said this so well. He said, no, we're competing with time. There is only so much time that everybody has in their day. And I think you guys are doing it with radio. I do it with radio. I do it with my articles. I do it with my shows. All of us are, every single day, who are in the entertainment business, competing now with everyone. That's one way of saying it. But another way of saying it is we're competing with time. And people only have so much time to watch great shows, new shows, and consume content. And ultimately, you have to make choices about how you're going to do that. And I think that has led to some of the biggest challenges that face media today. We've never had more and better options for entertainment. And simultaneously, we've never had more challenges in trying to reach the audience that might be willing to consume it.
Clay Travis will join us every Friday for a couple of segments on that Friday morning. Clay, it's great to have you a part of the show, man, and great to have you back on The Zone.
I'm excited to be back with you guys. Looking forward to the fall, and keep up the good work. You're good buddies, but it's going to be a fun time, I think. Good to talk to everybody.